You're listening to Raphael Epstein.
It's a Friday film time. In a moment, Josh Nelson will join us. We are going to talk Skyfall, any Bond. Who's your best Bond? Who's your best Bond gadget? What's your best Bond scene? James Bond. 1300-222-774. You might have seen Skyfall. You might be a Man with a Golden Gun diehard fan. I'd love to hear from you. Or you can text us as well. 0437-774-774. I have not breathed a word to Josh. I saw it today. I think he and I might differ. Let's have a little listen to the Skyfall trailer first.
3 months ago, you lost the drive containing the identity of every agent embedded in terrorist organizations across the globe.
007 reporting for duty.
Where the hell have you been?
Enjoying death.
I only have one question.
Why not stay dead? There's no shame in saying you've lost a step.
Skyfall, the trailer. I watched it today. We'll also talk cinema etiquette today. I actually stood up and told off people who were eating noisily in the cinema today, and it worked. But we'll get on to cinema etiquette in a moment. Josh is here. Hi, Josh.
Good to be back.
Filmology.com with a PH. Josh, what did you think? Did you like the latest installment of the Bond series?
I think you know what I'm going to say, don't you?
Yeah, tell me.
I'm going to be the cinematic pariah. I really didn't like this film. I'm the one who really didn't like this film at all, really.
Sold more than any other Bond film ever.
Yeah, and it's been fairly well critically received, but just because you're in the majority doesn't mean you're right.
Spoken like a true film critic. What? Tell me what you didn't like.
Oh, well, actually, I think maybe it's better to start with what I did like, because this isn't a woeful film. This is not Transformers or Transformers 3, which I know you've got a soft spot
for. Which I love too. Yeah.
But look, there's a couple of things that this film does really well. The visual style, Roger Deakins is the cinematographer in this film, and there's some really beautiful, sort of stunning sequences. You can tell where they've sort of spent the money, including one where, I mean, these are the kind of set pieces of you'd expect from contemporary Bond films, but there's one scene in particular which is filmed in Shanghai, and it's sort of refracted neon lights through these series of glass doors, and the build-up and the tension.
Action sequence too.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful kind of moment, and it's one of those moments where I think the skills of the director, Sam Mendes, are kind of evident. The thing I find with Bond films, I think it's a bit of a poison chalice, because a lot of really good directors have had their hand at Bond films over the years, and very few have pulled out anything really worthwhile. And I think Sam Mendes struggles with that sticking to the formula.
He made Spider-Man, the first Spider-Man, is that right?
No, Sam Mendes did, he's done a really interesting dramatic films like American Beauty, Revolutionary Road,
yes,
Road to Perdition. And a lot of those films were kind of received half-heartedly by critics, and I actually loved those. So this is a kind of strange turn. So yeah, there's a visual style that's quite nice here. The other thing that I really loved, particularly in the first act of the film, is Judi Dench. She steals. I mean,
she's extraordinary.
This is where I think having those class actors, having a strong dramatic director, really works in the film's favour in the early stages. And look, I almost wish that they could have an M spin-off and just give an entire film to Judi Dench, because she really owns the film in the first third when it's really about her and her relationship to Bond and her relationship to the higher-ups. And, you know, we get to see a sort of a sensitive side of her that we haven't really got in the earlier films. And, I mean, she finally has a meaty role, which is sort of a rare thing for a female in a Bond film, and maybe we can touch on...
Have you got any other things you like? We've got someone who's already got their favourite Bond flick. Do you want to go through the other things you like, and then we'll pause and get to the things you hated after we've had a word?
Oh, look, I think I've already almost expended the
things. That's it? That's all the things you like? Oh, my Lord, okay. I'll add my things that we liked in a moment, but Bernadette's got a favourite Bond flick. Hi, Bernadette.
Hi. I know the critics don't agree, but I just adore Diamonds Are Forever.
Oh, yeah, no. Oh, look, any Connery one works.
For the song, and also for the car chase through Las Vegas.
Yes.
Just amazing. And also for the final line, and I can't remember her character's name, but Jill Sinchin, who's in bed with Bond, and she looks up and she says, James, how do you suppose we can get those diamonds down?
And you see, he's an enduring figure, Josh. Thank you, Bernadette. Love it. Love that you love Diamonds Are Forever. Men want to be him
Bond
and women
girls.
Want to be with him. That was the line on the 1950s version of the James Bond novels. Look, we might bring you a little bit of Shirley Bassey too. Another text here from Sean in Belfield. Daniel Craig is the best Bond since Sean Connery. Can't wait to see the new installment. Sean, you are hands down correct. Daniel Craig is the best Bond. I'll tell you what, there's a few other great things in the film. There's a fantastic opening sequence. The chase through Istanbul. Great fun. And I think Javier Bardem is great as the baddie. But I think where we might disagree is these are not really films. They are essentially a series of impressions and cliches, many of which we are already intensely familiar with. All they need to do is carry them off with the right mixture, a little bit of elan, you know, some seriousness, the odd comic line, and a reason, a plot that at least has you wondering what will happen next, and that's really all the plot needs to be. And it succeeds in all of those things, doesn't it? I mean, it's really, I mean, it's the roller coaster ride. It's the same roller coaster ride each installment. As long as they revamp the roller coaster ride in the right way, it's a hell of a ride.
Yeah, see, I disagree. I think even with the formula, it doesn't actually do the formula things that well. I found a lot of the action sequences really tepid.
Really?
I found the opening kind of, you know, bland.
You didn't like the chase scene in the beginning?
I thought it had moments, but
oh,
again,
it's
that let's cut away, let's cut every 2 seconds. You go back to even the Roger Moore one, some of the chase sequences in that have a bit more guts than what I thought this film does.
Okay, well, Josh doesn't think it has any guts. You tell me, 1300-222-774, James Bond has no guts, according to Josh Nelson, at least the latest installment. 1300-222-774, you can text us as well, of course, 0437-774-774, your favourite Bond. You might even have a favourite Bond moment. Josh, let's talk about the women in the film, because I think that's a bit of a bugbear for you. What do you think?
Yeah, look, you talked about the formula of Bond. So going into this film, you know, if you're going to complain about the sexism, you're sort of complaining about, you know, the colour blue, watching a blue-coloured film. I mean, that's the sort of the level. You know it's going to be in there. You know his kind of character. I mean, you could argue that maybe they haven't tried to adapt Bond to contemporary politics or play off the fact that he's a character who's kind of outdated in a contemporary context.
Well, they used to. Remember, didn't she call him a sexist, misogynist dinosaur?
Well, this is the... Yeah.
That's pre-Daniel Craig.
This was the Pierce Brosnans were trying to kind of reconcile those sexual politics with the Bond character. But they seem to have kind of gone back to those earlier politics when they've gone back to reboot the series. So, look, there's none of the females have any agency in this film except for M. And
progressively, well, she has a lot of it. I mean, she's central.
Well, particularly in the beginning. But even then, towards the end of the film, her agency becomes less and less. The thing, though, is I think they've done a bit of miscasting or the miscasting justice here, because the sort of the villainous Bond girl and the MI6 Bond girl, neither of them have... They're not really powerful characters on screen. They don't really have any guts. I mean, this is what I'm talking about. They're sort of lifeless figures. And the way in which they're...
Well, it is a Hollywood action film.
But even
not having a fully developed character is not exactly an uncommon flaw.
Well, I think these are valid criticisms in a kind of maybe a different context. Look, the sexism was one thing, but this is not my major kind of political, ideological question about the film. It's more the Javier Bardem character.
Oh, you didn't like him?
Maybe it was
he's a baddie.
Yeah, maybe it was more the fact that the audience I was with seemed to find it very funny that you had a kind of camp character playing this role, and the fact that, you know, it wasn't so much the fact that it was clearly a kind of a homoerotic or homosexual villain character, but that his villainy seemed to be emerging from his sexuality. I found that really problematic, particularly
he's
even
bad
it was,
because he's gay. You think
well,
that was the
yeah,
way
that was
drawn.
How he's nasty. Like, his nastiness was conveyed through his camp sexuality, the way he would flirt with Bond, and he's, you know, he's a lascivious character because clearly he's not, you know, heterosexual. And I found that really troubling. That seemed to be something...
See, I didn't get that at all. I just got him as being just, you know, effed in the head. I mean, he was just a bit crazy.
Well,
the fact that he sort of...
But you mentioned
sleazy.
His campness before. I mean, that is a key part of his character.
He's got nice clothes. I tell you what, James Bond has nice clothes.
What about his hair, though?
Who? Javier Bardem,
yeah,
blonde
just to,
hair?
Yeah, to drop the level down a bit. Javier Bardem likes his weird hair.
Did he say that in an interview, did he?
No, I'm just making
that
look
every film
after No Country for Old Men.
And the weird, he's got very strange blonde eyebrows. You'll remember him from Vicky Cristina Barcelona and what else has Javier?
No Country for Old Men. Yeah.
And the beautiful film that he was in where he's the homosexual prisoner in Cuba. So Javier Bardem does a great turn. I'm getting a text here. Javier is hot. He certainly is hot. He has great clothes. Did you like Daniel Craig's clothes?
Oh, yes, he's very...
Didn't do it for you?
And
all
the product placement, the Heinekens and the Rolex watches.
Everyone was writing about the Heineken. I did not spot it.
It was
we've done their work for them. But.
Well, it's pretty overt. I mean,
the beer bottle? I don't remember.
There's about three scenes. There's one in MI6, but there's one where he's actually drinking from it early on in the film.
I didn't even notice. Totally went past
Well, again, that's, I guess, the wonder of subconscious or unconscious product placement.
But he's
placement.
An okay Bond, isn't he, Daniel Craig? He sort of delivers the goods.
He doesn't have the smoothness, the suaveness that I don't think he's a particularly suave character.
We don't
character.
Buy suave anymore, do we? I mean, it's not quite Bourne. You know, they're supposed to be a bit rough and troubled. We don't buy the suave action figure anymore.
I still buy him suave and sophisticated. You can be both, I think.
In a modern action film?
I don't think Daniel... Yeah, I think you can. I don't think Daniel Craig is necessarily a bad Bond in any way. But look, my problems aren't really with the central character. It's more that, you know, they have these opportunities to do something slightly interesting within the framework of the formula, like the origin story. Casino Royale worked, I thought, because they had a kind of an...
Yeah. And there are bits of the origin story in this one, too.
Well, there are. But the funny thing with this one, it's still committing to the origin story and going back to how Bond became Bond. But at the same time, most of the humour is derived from the fact that he's over the hill. It's that kind of... It's the Danny Glover Lethal Weapon jokes that I'm too old for this. You know what? It's right. Like, hang on. Well, which is it? Are you too young and you fresh? Or are you kind of over the hill? So again, there's some inconsistencies in the plotting and the dialogue that I just thought, you know what? If you're going to commit to an idea, do it wholesale. And that's the problem I had with Quantum of Solace, that it was all about Bond is let loose, Bond is all about revenge, and he never really cuts loose. I was like, well, if you're going to start with that premise, commit to it. Do something interesting.
You're so over-interpreting these films. They're James Bond films.
I'm a film critic. Over-interpreting. Come on.
They're chip packet films. They're just really high-class chips.
Even then, you know, you demand more from chip packet films now. Mm. Like, Christopher Nolan's Batman series, you could say they're chip packet films, but there's something dark, there's something intellectual, there's something kind of, you know, unique and visionary.
That's where TV lives.
I agree with you completely. I actually, maybe the next segment, next year, we should just do a TV segment with me. If, you know, we could double up.
Double up on TV. Because I watched an episode of Boardwalk Empire last night, second season. If you want character, if you want script, if you want acting, you go to the golden age of television. You don't go to film anymore, do you?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and that's a sad fact, and it's not going to stop me from complaining about the fact that film, it has the potential. Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing with this film in terms of the Batman ones is the end of this film is basically Batman. The end of Batman Begins. Yeah. We go back to the childhood mansion. Yes. We see what happens. Similar. It's almost kind of
They're common comic book or Hollywood tropes. Anyway, we shall return to our James Bond discussion. 1300-222-774. Love to hear your favourite Bond film. You might have a favourite Bond gadget. The fantastic character from The Hour pops up as Q, the quartermaster. Ben Whishaw, I think is his name. He's great. The tech geeky cardigan wearer is back as Q. You might want to tell me what you think is your favourite Bond flick. 1300-222-774. Josh Nelson is here. Filmology.com is the blog. You spell Filmology with a PH. We'll get on to a marathon trilogy that's coming up at the Astor that Josh is going to endure soon. I saw the trailer for the prequel. You can probably guess what we're talking about. But let's talk about the latest cop flick with full use of cameras and our postmodern idea of filming ourselves. It's called End of Watch. Josh.
It is. This is a film from director David Ayer, who has sort of been on the scenes in Hollywood for a while, but mostly as a scriptwriter. He wrote the script for Training Day. The Denzel Washington Ethan Hawke film.
That's his Academy Award, Denzel Washington, isn't it?
Yeah, that was the year of the African American Oscars where they decided to kind of give those their token, you know, politically correct awards. That's very wrong of me. I think that's true. Training Day was interesting for two thirds and then it sort of fell apart at the end.
Yes.
He's got a clear obsession, and that is cops and South Central LA, and he's done a number of films set in this area. And yeah, this is basically a buddy cop film starring Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Peña. Who are sort of two cops who on the circuit in the sort of the pretty dangerous area of South Central LA. And it's their sort of day-to-day grind, basically. But it's the one thing that this film does differently and far more sort of superior to most cop films that we get is it has a really interesting style, and it borrows from this found footage genre, this idea of the footage is being pieced together from, you know, mobile phones or cameras that people are carrying around.
Jack Gyllenhaal is carrying a camera around, isn't he?
So, yeah, there's a number of cameras. He's carrying a handheld camera, and he has sort of lapel cameras, him and both his partner. But the film switches between this sort of found footage and also, I guess, the sort of objective camera, the third-person camera of the director. So it's not doesn't wholesale commit to this sort of concept, which is interesting, I think, because it gets past this idea of why would a character still carry the camera around when he's getting shot at by, you know, gangsters and so on. That's the question that often comes up about with these types of films. But there's a wonderful chemistry between these two actors, and you get this sense, and so much of the film is shot inside their patrol cars. They're driving around, they're talking about women, and they're talking about their relationships and playing off the kind of the racial ideas and the kind of cultural identities in LA. It just has there's a wonderful bonding film at the heart of this. So when
it's a buddy flick.
It's completely a buddy flick. I mean, it's interesting from the race perspective and cops, because it begins with a chase sequence filmed inside the car from the kind of the dashboard mounted camera, which is almost identical to the Cops TV show. And there's been a lot of criticism of Cops over the years for its kind of racial profiling and the way it just highlights, you know, African Americans and Hispanics are always sort of vilified as the people they select to broadcast. And here it's very careful in terms of the treatment of race. So you have the Michael Peña character who represents the kind of good, the family life, the Latino.
What's he been in?
I've seen his face in the posters, but I'm not sure if he's done anything major.
He's been lots of small roles. Nothing sort of springs to mind, but this is his first sort of major Hollywood film, I guess. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's those kind of nice representations are counterpoised by the evil Mexican cartel who are moving on. And that's really the crux of the story is that they have these series of busts, and each one seems to relate back to a cartel that's moving in this sort of quite a nasty cartel. So they become targets, basically, to be bumped off because of the drug money. But there's these nice women on the side. But again, it plays off the kind of their outside relationships versus their relationships in the car. It's interesting in terms of style. It's interesting in terms of the performance. And I think this is, I mean, the guy I saw it with came out and said that's the hands down the best cop film I've ever seen.
Oh right, okay.
And I was almost tempted to agree. Yeah, it's a really good film. It's been on general release for about 3 weeks now, so it's probably winding up in the next week or so.
But can't believe films are only on for 3 or 4 weeks. It's insane.
Some only last one or two.
Oh, it's dreadful. Look, Bernadette's texted in. We spoke to her before about Bernadette about Diamonds Are Forever. Raph, bloody Gen X and Gen Y, the original Bassey Diamonds Are Forever far superior to the overdubbed remix rubbish. You just played Bernadette. I'm sorry. I'm sure we just plucked that one out of the ABC system. We'll try and bring you some original Shirley Bassey next week, shall we?
Play it on vinyl. Can we play it on vinyl?
We can actually play it on vinyl. There's an LP. There's a turntable you can bring in. I think you have to sort of get it out of the vault and, you know, hand crank it and start up the steam engine to get it playing. End of Watch is on wide release. Let's talk about The Hobbit, only because it gives Josh a chance to give you some idea of how crazy he is and what he's doing this weekend, although I suppose it's a hot weekend, so it's not such a bad idea to hide inside a movie theatre. Before Skyfall, I saw the trailer for The Hobbit. It looked extraordinary. It looked beautiful, everything you'd expect of a Lord of the Rings film. And I'm not sure of the way that the film's been made, Josh. I don't know how much you know about that, but the imagery, the special effects, it looked like the resolution. It's kind of like this super fine resolution. The special effects and everything just looked extraordinary. Are they filming that on some sort of new technology, or
it's a super new digital technology. I read an interview with Peter Jackson during the week, and I think he was talking about he shot it on a camera that was doing double frame rate. Well, I think I might be mistaken, but there's something about the frame rate he was using which is unusual to try and capture that.
Extraordinary, you know, just vivid. And sometimes there was those moments in the Lord of the Rings films where you could sort of see the edges of the effects, or the people didn't quite look like they were all on the one set and they'd been mashed together. None of that. It looked extraordinary. But, of course, the reason I'm mentioning that is,
well, the Astor are playing all three Lord of the Rings extended versions on film.
Extended versions back to back
on film.
You really need to extend them, especially the third one.
So it kicks off at 10 and finishes at about 11:30 at night. And
this is all day on Sunday.
All day Sunday. I'll be sitting at the Astor. I might bring a pillow, actually, given those seats. But bring it on in preparation for The Hobbit. Why not?
I'm not sure I've been to the Astor in summer. Is it air-conditioned or is it just cool because it's a big old
stone
building?
It's dark. It's cool. I'm sure it'll be fine.
You really don't need to see the extended edition of the third film. You really don't.
Well, it's pretty rare to see film anyway nowadays, but to see the extended versions on film at the
Astor. Are they on 35mm, aren't
they? They're on 35mm, not digital prints.
There's a lot of digital prints at the Astor sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah. Well, just because a lot of studios are destroying film prints, which is quite sad. But this seems like a one-off opportunity that won't come around all that often. So, yeah, I can't wait. 13 hours. They are having intermissions between the films and
how long are the intermissions?
Film. There's 30 minutes and there's 20 minutes between each film.
Right. Are they like Hobbit themed food or something like that?
Oh, I might have to dress up. That's a good idea. Oh, get some hair, chop off some hair and paste it to my toes. My feet just walk around barefoot. That's a lovely look.
Oh, please don't. Look, you can check out Josh's musings at filmology.com. That's film with a PH. End of Watch, we were discussing The Hobbit's coming up on Boxing Day, and of course, we were talking about Skyfall, which you probably have to, you know, avoid like the plague if you go to your local multiplex. It'll probably be playing in four cinemas at once this weekend.